I just think there are a lot more questions about him, and there should be more questions, you know, than I think some people are asking.
Good evening and welcome to episode 41 of Flags Fly Forever, Baseball Prospectus Fantasy Podcast. I am your host, Brett Sayer, and with me, as usual, is Mike Gianella and Mauricio Rubio. How are you guys doing on yet another of a long installment of Monday evenings?
Well, we got slammed by a record snowstorm, so I've been inside a lot.
Yeah, we got a lot of ice, so that was fun.
Yeah, I don't want your ice. I'll keep the snow. It's cool.
Man, how old are we that we just talk about the weather every week?
I feel like I'm
talking to my mom, because this is what happens with my mom. We get into a lull in the conversation because I can do a whole podcast about her, but we get into a lull after like maybe 5 or 10 minutes, and then she fills in with the weather, and it does what this does. It fills in like 2 or 3 minutes, like perfectly.
Well, here's the thing, right? Like, we did it one time, and now I feel really awkward if we don't do it every time.
Yeah, at least until the season starts. Then we can kind of talk about what's going on.
Well, it's going to be nice out, too. So, you know, it's not really
going to
be 55 degrees, yawn.
That's true. And we'll all have games on in the background while we're recording these. So, it'll be nice. I remember those days.
Yeah, when we were all distracted doing this podcast.
Uh-huh. Oh, yeah. Oh, that's right.
Yeah, this is, sadly for everyone, this is us at full attention.
Yeah. I'm paying attention.
We're all paying attention.
Right now.
Yeah, I know. When like Felix or Kershaw's pitching, I do tend to kind of, you know when the 10 o'clock game starts, because a half hour in, I start looking over.
True. So you can read all of us at baseballprospectus.com. You can follow us on Twitter. I am at Dynasty Guru. Mike is at Mike Gianella. That's G-I-A-N-E-L-L-A. And Mao is at MRubio52. You can rate and review us on iTunes or Stitcher Radio app. You can reach us via email as a podcast, flagsflyforever@baseballprospectus.com. And we are actually going to start this week off with a reader email. We got an interesting email from Sean, so we are going to jump into that as a first mini topic before we get into shortstops. Our position of the week is shortstops. But first, gentlemen and weathermen, I typically go into drafts not paying much attention to batting average. If I can get guys who typically have a good batting average, great. If not, I don't necessarily target them, as batting average can fluctuate between years, and I'm more comfortable with projections on categories like home runs and stolen bases. Last year, I won my league, no big deal, but kind of big deal, despite being significantly last in batting average for just about the entire season. I wanted to see if you guys had any specific theories as to how you approach batting average in your drafts. One positive of being so far behind in batting average was that it allowed me to take chances on guys like Baez, Springer, Chris Carter, Mark Trumbo, etc., as pure power upside guys, because I had nothing to lose in batting average. I know we shouldn't react to April results, but having Brett Laurie, Jed Jerko, Brian McCann, and the like basically sunk me in the category from the beginning of the year. At what point do you start cutting bait with guys providing modest counting stats but hurting you in average? Thanks, Sean. So I'm pretty sure I said batting average about 12 times in the last minute. So I'm going to try not to say it again for the rest of the episode. But Mike, what are your thoughts on Sean's question?
Well, there's a couple things. First of all, I would approach this the opposite way, Sean. And, you know, first of all, thanks for your question. We don't get too many here. We're always welcome to them, though. I like to more don't want to say target guys, but I like to more move guys down in the rankings who don't hit for batting average. I know that Brett and I have a similar philosophy. We got burned last year in labor with Joe Mauer, but we kind of feel like batting average is a little bit undervalued, and this certainly cuts the other way. Like, one of the reasons I'm not a big fan of Mark Trumbo, one reason I don't like Javi Baez, you know, this year, and we'll get into that later, is because of that batting average. It's really just a drag, not just on the category, but, you know, as Sean points out, kind of on everything else, because you're just not getting those counting stats. So as far as cutting guys, I feel like you almost have to do this preemptively. You have to kind of proactively rank your players or build your auction values to make sure that you either don't get these guys, or in a worst case scenario, you know, if Mark Trumbo falls in at the right price, that's fine, but you definitely, you know, don't want to overload your team with these guys early. That's my philosophy. I think you don't buy those guys in the first place if you, or too many of them if you can avoid it.
Yeah, I think one of the key terms in the email here is, you know, one of the key phrases is providing modest counting stats. I think if you're at the point where you're sacrificing batting average for just modest advantages in counting stats, it's not worth the drag, because it's going to destroy your entire team, like you said, Mike. So, I mean, for me, if I'm going to take a chance on a guy who's just going to really hurt me in batting average, it's got to be near elite production in other areas.
Yeah, and there's certainly no shortage of people who attempt the punt batting average from the beginning in drafts, and you know, we've seen people do it in expert leagues. It's certainly a viable strategy if you think batting average is being overrated. But I'm with Mike. I think it's, and we have, like you said, we have a similar philosophy in that we both think that batting average is underrated. That yes, it's difficult to predict from year to year, but it's more stable than people give it credit for, and it's more stable on the positive side and more differential on the negative side. I mean, you could draft someone who you think is going to hit 250 and ends up hitting 280, or obviously you end up hitting 220, but those guys are the ones that end up hitting 220 are the ones that tend to fall out of your lineup. So, you know, having the having a couple of guys who provide at least reasonable anchors in the category will keep you afloat, and it's not it shouldn't be something that you have to pay a ton for these days, especially with the decreasing batting average across the league.
I just want to add a quick point to that. The dump batting average strategy, Tristan Cockcroft of ESPN did it in Tout Wars in 2013. It can work better in an only league. The problem in a mixed league is there's so many guys that the floor is so much lower that you can carry a 220, 230 guy in an only and get away with it, or a couple of those guys. It's really difficult to do that because of all the counting stats in a mixed without getting dinged everywhere. And that was kind of what I was speaking to.
That's a good point. So thank you, Sean, for writing in. And again, you know, as we get into the season, we will try to start doing more reader emails when we get good ones in. So again, you can send them to flagsflyforever@baseballprospectus.com. So now we are going to jump into our regularly scheduled program, and we are going to talk about a position that is usually referred to as weak, and appropriately so. It's shortstop, and we are going to start off by digging into some of last year's numbers before we take into the tiers for 2015. And we're going to start in the American League, where the list looks awfully interesting, mostly because there is just way more shortstop talent in the National League. So, Mike, what jumps out at you from the 2014 valuations that you put together?
Well, it's not even – usually it is the valuations. Like, usually I'll look at the dollars. From a dollar standpoint, what jumps out is there are seven guys, if you include the multi-positionals, who earn 19 or more. starting with Jose Reyes at 29, down to Ben Zobrist at 19, and then there's a cliff. You know, it goes to J.J. Hardy, who I think we all agreed at a down year at 13. It goes to Jeter, who in an AL only earned 12, which I think would be a shock to anybody who plays in a mix that he earned anything in any format. But the other thing that jumps out is statistically. You know, there are, I think, and I got to scroll down to see if this is correct, but yeah, there's three guys who hit double-digit home runs at shortstop in the American League. That's something. Like we know power is down. But I think if you're in an AL only, and I think this will apply to the mix as we see when we get into the later segment, this is a place where you kind of get steals. You really – there's a few guys you can kind of grab for the stolen bases. I wouldn't necessarily reach for the power here. You got Zobrist, who his power has been kind of questionable. You got Brad Miller, who I don't know if the skills are going to hold up this year. I'm talking about the double-digit guys here. And you got Alexi Ramirez, who had a bit of a spike. I really don't know. You know, Hanley Ramirez is going to be in the league and have one last year of eligibility. But of the players that were in last year, you know, do you guys trust anyone on this list to kind of pop 10 or more home runs who are still in the American League?
I'll tell you the two guys that jump out to me as most likely to hit 10 home runs, excluding Hanley Ramirez, are J.J. Hardy and Jose Reyes. Both hit 9 home runs last year. I think both are reasonable candidates to hit 12 plus in 2015.
Yeah. I think Hardy's just kind of weird because you can see that bounce back and see the average go down and give it back. Last year was just a weird, you know, we kind of talked about this in our internal meetings. It was just a weird season for Hardy.
Yeah, it really was.
Yeah. Mao, did you have anything to add on this list? Like anything that jumps out at you?
Well, besides like the complete lack of power, I think one of the guys that, you know, I always focus in on every year at the shortstop list is Elvis Andrus. He's still kind of young. He hasn't quite turned into the player that I thought he would. And last year, you know, he took a big step back in stolen bases, and I really thought he cratered, but he still earned $20, which, you know, it's a lot better than I thought he would have done, just given my impressions of his season last year. And yeah, that gap is real. I guess Jonathan Villar is like a realistic option at shortstop in the American League as well. It's just, it's such a weird list.
Yeah, there's just a lot of disappointments, you know, and, you know, Jeter's obviously gone and was on his last legs, but a lot of disappointments, a lot of injuries. Asdrubal Cabrera got traded, so it's obviously just, you know, part of a season for him. It's a weird list, and particularly, you know, I almost want to jump to the National League soon. It's still kind of thin, even with Hanley. It's just a weird – it's kind of a weird culture.
Yeah, the guy that I look at on the sheet, just real quick before we move on, is Eric Ibar, who – you know, is one of those guys who, especially in a mono format, just gets overlooked constantly. And, you know, nothing about his season jumps out as being super valuable. I mean, he hit .278, he stole 16 bases and hit 7 homers, but played enough to get those counting stats and earned $22. He, you know, even with the consistency that Ibar has had, at least the relative consistency over the past, you know, handful of seasons, he still outperformed his expert league bids by on average looks like $8 or $9.
Yeah, it was $8.
Yeah, so it's it'd be interesting to see whether that crops up again. But you know, at some point, Ibar needs to get a little bit more respect as far as those bids go, because he's been doing this now for a while.
Well, it's a great point about the counting stats, too, and I think it's people always look, and I think we've talked this on the show before, people always look at home runs and steals, and that's what they focus on. But, you know, Ibar was fourth in runs, and I believe, you know, I'm kind of like eyeballing this here, you know, he was second at the position in runs batted in. You know, that's really big. I mean, it's really you're getting something in both those categories at the position, and I think sometimes people overlook that.
Do you guys think Alexei Ramirez gets overlooked?
A little bit.
Not much, right?
Yeah, a little bit, although you got to keep in mind like that power didn't quite come out of nowhere, but it was kind of an unexpected spike. I think I look at the price here, an average salary of 15 in the expert leagues. He probably should have been 18, 17, 19, somewhere in that range. So I don't think if you bid 26 for him, I think that was crazy. Nobody expected him to do that. He probably should have went for a little bit more.
Yeah. So moving on to the National League with the more interesting players, you don't really get a huge jump in dollars earned from the top tier, but you do have a $30 player here in D. Gordon. And Mal, what do you notice here that is of interest?
Well, there's a lot more power here. I guess the most interesting guy to me is probably Johnny Peralta, still earning like $18 and hitting 21 home runs. I've been expecting him to slide back for quite some time now, or even move off the position, but still maintaining the shortstop eligibility, and you know, given his offensive skill set, that's held up pretty well. It's, you know, I think that's a guy that's always going to surprise me. And of course, the Brendan Crawford spike that you know, he just outperformed everything.
Yeah, you kind of hit on the head. The power in the National League at the position is crazy high compared to the power in the American League. When we talked about there were three players that hit double digit homers in the American League at the position. There were 10 in the National League
and 320s.
Yeah. With Ian Desmond leading the way, but you know, it still is impossible to understate the value that Troy Tulowitzki has when he is in the lineup. He had 315 at bats this year and still earned $23. And you know, the owners who bought him in the expert league spent $30 on him. If you had told them that they were only going to get 300 at bats out of him, I think they would have expected less production. So it's he's always that risk, but man, when he's healthy, he's something else.
I think the other thing I'll add is that in the National League and the mono formats, you got a lot of, you know, you mentioned salaries and earnings. You got a lot of profit out of these guys. You know, Gordon was obvious. You know, Harrison wasn't even drafted, and of course they'll be off the position this year. But beyond those two, you know, you had Crawford, you had Jordy Mercer, Adeni Hechavarria earned some money back. Even guys like Josh Rutledge and Chris Owings, I mean, they weren't anything special, but in a mono format for their modest investment, they, you know, kind of returned to profit. So really interesting, and compared to the AL, where, you know, kind of looking back at that, you know, we mentioned Ibar who gained, but there were a lot of modest – there are a lot of modest losers over there.
I also just want to give a shout out to most of the experts and you, Mike, for just completely nailing Starlin Castro, even coming off with just a historically bad 2013 campaign. You guys really hit the nail on the head in terms of production, even given that.
Yeah, although, you know, it's what's really funny about Castro is that he was a guy, Tristan, he went the lowest in tout wars. Tristan got him for 15. And I had 16 on the tip of my tongue, and I was like, oh, you know, I just can't do it. And the guy I wound up getting instead was Anthony Rendon. So it worked out. But at the time, I felt it wasn't like Castro over Rendon. It was like, oh, I don't know, man. I'm Castro, Rendon, you know, Castro should bounce up, or I think he eventually will. It is funny, though. We nailed him, but it just says something in this culture that we're looking at with offense, that 14 home runs, 58 runs, 65 runs batted, 4 steals, 291 is a $19 player and only.
That 291 is just so much stronger of a batting average than you think.
It's manna from heaven.
And I just said batting average again, even though I swore I wouldn't.
Can you go to BA? Is BA cheating?
It just sounds weird on a podcast.
It does.
Yeah.
So let's let's jump into the 2015 tiers. I mean, these are up at baseballperspectives.com. We're recording later than usual, so everything is already up. These tiers were put together by Mike, so I guess let's let Mike do the honors and kick it off from the top. You have two guys in the five-star tier. It should not be a surprise to anyone who they are, but you say in the post that you could argue that the days of elite shortstops is gone in fantasy. But how close to being four-star guys were Tulow and Desmond here?
They're close in terms of the earnings. What I said in the piece, if you haven't read it yet, is that it is the offensive context that kind of pushes them up. I think Tulow in a mono format, because of what we talked about with the injuries, is close. I think Desmond's closer just because this is a perfect segue with Castro. That batting average has never really been like quite elite, and that is sort of what keeps him, you know, it keeps, he's in the five star for me because of that 2020 potential, but, and he did do it last year. And I'm actually looking at the PCOTA, the PFM here on the article, but that's kind of what makes them close. I think they're both five star though. I think they're both top 15, top 20 picks in a mixed draft. To me, that's elite.
Sounds good. So Mal, would you, if you are in a reasonably deep league, would you make the argument to take Desmond over to Lewitsky, or are you still comfortable with that risk?
Damn, Brett, just bring the questions hard this week. You know, I can see where the argument comes from with Desmond, because he does provide you the 500 at-bats, and it's a lot harder to pick up a replacement-level shortstop on the back end. And you do want to be a little bit more secure in the players that you pick up in deeper leagues, just because the talent pool is a lot shallower. So, I mean, I could see where that argument comes from, and I would totally respect somebody making that argument. I just wouldn't. Because, you know, as you said a little bit earlier, when we were talking about what Tulowitzki provided in 321 at-bats, when he's in there, he's incredibly valuable. And I'm more than willing to eat the risk of having, you know, even 500 plate appearances of Troy Tulowitzki, which, you know, it's an outside shot. But even if we get to 300 to 500 at-bats, like, that's perfectly acceptable for me. So, I mean, I can see where you would want to make the argument for Desmond, but I would still go with Tulowitzki.
Yeah, I mean, it really depends on your league size, because it makes a huge difference if you're replacing an injured Tulow with a Chris Owings type, or if you're replacing him with Ruben Tejada, or if you're replacing him with, you know, Jeff Bianchi. I mean, it really depends how much you want it to hurt.
Besmirch the name of Jeff Bianchi.
Yeah, the expert NL onlys with four-man reserves and Tout Wars and like six or seven in labor and CBS, that's a real thing. You know, where Jeff Bianchi or someone like that is the replacement. So you either get somebody you hope doesn't hurt your batting average and maybe gets a run or an RBI that week, or you get nothing.
Yeah, it's slim pickings in, you know, a lot of our listeners do play in mono formats, so a lot of you guys know how slim those pickings are at Midland Field when somebody goes down. But let's move down to the next tier. The next tier is made up of four guys. You know, these guys we've covered at some point in the podcast already, but I guess we'll start at the top. Hanley Ramirez is the guy that leads this tier. Obviously, he's moving to Boston, more favorable park, but tougher league. Should offensive expectations be any different for him coming into this season than they were going into last season, Mike?
Well, you know, it's funny. It's a weird question because last year the expectations were really high. He was a first-round pick, you know, based off of, you know, Tulo-esque production at bat for at bat 2013. You know, and the funny thing about Hanley is that he actually played a good amount last year, and that production just wasn't there. So this is an odd case where I think the Bakota is probably right about on. Maybe with a like not quite as many steals, which is saying 18, I could see like 12 to 14, but with a little bit more power, like say low 20s in the home runs. I think the park helps, but I think the lineup is going to help. That revamped Boston lineup is going to help too. I think, you know, our Ben Carsley on TN will be happy to hear this. I also like Xander Bogaerts this year, and I think he'll improve. I think Betts is legit, even if he doesn't do it at bat for at bat. So, yeah, I think the improvement is legit. And honestly, I've been moving Hanley up in my own personal rankings as this goes along. So by the time BP's bid limits come out, I'm going to have Hanley probably closer to the five-star guys than I am to Reyes and the rest of this group.
Yeah, there's you know, but there's some hesitation with players when they move from the National League to the American League, but you know, generally that doesn't apply to hitters as strong as Hanley is. And the number to watch with him is really the batting average. With his contact profile, hitting in Fenway for 81 games is going to has the potential to raise his batting average by about maybe 10 to 15 points. If he's a 290 to 300 guy, again, which is, you know, certainly I wouldn't project it, but if it's certainly possible, then that in confluence with the counting stats really could make him a nice value if he continues going where he's going in drafts now.
Yeah, he could sneak up in mono formats to 30. I think he could get there. I agree with you, Brett. I'm not saying he will. I want to kind of be careful about that. But if he showed a 30 in AL only, it wouldn't surprise me.
Yeah. So the other guy who I think it wouldn't surprise anyone to reach $30 in AL only is Jose Reyes. He's a different player now than we saw early in his career. Obviously, he's slowed down a bit. But there's one category I want to focus on with Reyes. There's been a lot of talk about Josh Donaldson's move from the A's to the Jays, and what that's going to do for his home run RBI opportunities. Having Reyes hitting in front of those three sluggers in Donaldson, Batista, and Encarnacion, there hasn't been much talk about what he could possibly put up in the run scored category, but it could be quite high if that offense lives up to expectations. Reyes is not a guy who's been, he's never been a huge on base guy, but he's a career 341 on base, 328 last year in a little bit of a down year for his walk rate. But what is given the improvements that they've made in the lineup, Matt, what's a realistic number of runs you can expect from Reyes if he stays reasonably healthy?
If he stays reasonably healthy, I think you're looking at 90 plus at least. I mean, it's, you know, per 162 games, you know, he scores 109. He's a smart base runner. You know, like you said, the on base isn't incredibly impressive, but he gets on base enough to certainly take advantage of what's going on behind him. And, you know, given all the, you know, I was about to bring this up, you know, before you brought it up specifically with Reyes, but given all the improvements that the Blue Jays have made to their lineup, it's, you know, I think you can reasonably expect 90 runs or thereabouts, just because the run environment's really good for him. You know, I think the context indicators are going to be pretty good for him. And, you know, he's smart on the base paths. And he's you know, not as fast as he used to be, but you know, he's got enough speed to certainly take advantage of it. And I think that his base running IQ is really clearly indicated by his stolen base to caught stealing ratio. He attempted 32 stolen bases last year and was successful 30 times. So, I mean, this is a guy who I think is maturing into, you know, second half speed burner career type level. And the speed numbers, the stolen base numbers probably aren't going to be as gaudy, but this is certainly a guy who knows what he's doing on the base paths.
I agree with all that. And to answer your question, Brett, I think 100 runs would probably be on the high end. I think 95 is probably 90 to 95 is probably a more realistic guess. And it's just a tough category to predict because, you know, BABIP, luck, all that stuff. I will say about Reyes, the one caution I'll raise about him, and it's not the caution you'd expect. You know, some be like, oh, you know, he always gets hurt. You know, if you actually go look at his games played compared to some other shortstops, it's like, yeah, he's had his injuries, but that's kind of off the screen, you know, outside of 2013. He's been on the field like 130, you know, 140 games. My thing about Reyes, and when you look at the valuations, he's kind of the best of these guys, like these speed guys. And yeah, he's a little more power. He made 9 home runs. And I agree with you, Brett. He could hit 10 to 12. But he's not really that much better than some of these other players. And I actually kind of am going the other way with him. I still have a solid mid-20s price on him and only. But at one point, I had him up closer to like 27, 28. And I looked at him, I'm like, you know, I know what he earned last year. I know he's really good. But it just seems like there's so many guys out there who could steal 20, 25, 30 bases. The differentiation for me with Reyes isn't necessarily big enough for me to put that high 20s price tag. And I know some people are going to chase him to that too.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of that depends on what you think of the power. I mean, the power spike that was hinted at when he came to Toronto showed up in 2013, but he got hurt. He had 10 home runs in 93 games. Last year, it fizzled out a little bit, but there, you know, if there are going to be people out there who think Reyes can hit 15 home runs, and if he hits 15 home runs, then it doesn't matter if he only steals 25 to 30 bases. That's still far more valuable than your speed guys in the next tier, like your Elvis Andrus and Elsie Escobar types.
I agree. I will point out, I mentioned this in the article, his ISO has dropped, and albeit slightly, but every year since 2011. You know, including that 2013 campaign. So I think while the home runs were there, I don't have the batted ball distance in front of me. He just seems like a player who's kind of slipping a little bit. And yes, it could happen. He could hit 15 home runs. It's just not something I want to bet on. I think that 10 to 12 is a safer bet.
I agree. I think 12 is a pretty safe and reasonable number there.
What do you got in his run scored, Brett?
I think he can get 100. I think if he plays in 145 games, which is pretty similar to last year, I think he can score 100 runs. Nice. Which would, yeah. I mean, I'm scanning. I don't think there was a single shortstop who scored 100 runs last year. And nope, there wasn't. Reyes led all shortstops in runs scored last year with 94. So ticking up from that seems like he could tick up slightly with the improvement in the lineup. But then again, we're trying to predict contextual stats, and you know how that goes. Moving down in the list, we get to the Chicago guys that we mentioned before. So Mao, since you're a resident Chicago resident, How realistic is it that one of these years, whether it's 2015 or beyond, we see the season that everyone's been waiting to see from Starlin Castro, where he hits 300 plus and hits 20 plus homers?
Well, the thing with Castro is the thing that he kind of added, and he's been adding ever since he's been up in the league, is he really started adding opposite field power, which if you go back and you start looking at his spray charts and start comparing it to other shortstops or even other players with a similar hit profile, the thing that really stands out with him is how often he goes to right field and right center. So I think the 300 actually is going to be tougher than the 20 home runs just because it's so much harder to hit right now. You were mentioning earlier that the 291 was just such a valuable stat, and I think that's going to hold up. You know, I think for me, he probably settles into a 285 with 15 to 20 home run power, and I think when he spikes, there's a pretty good chance, I'd probably put it at 60%, that he has one or two seasons where he's just hitting 310 with 20 home runs. You know, I'm notoriously the high guy in Starlin Castro, so, you know, maybe I'm a bit compromised here, but, you know, I think that when you look at what adjustments he made last year from 2013 to 2014 and where he's going with his hard hit balls and how much of the field that he's using. I just, yeah, I can see 20 home runs in there.
So would you take him over Alexi Ramirez in 2015?
Yeah, I would lean Castro over Ramirez. It's, you know, was it Nick who wrote up the comparison?
Yes.
Yeah, it was tremendous, and I think he really did a pretty good job of bringing it all down and seeing where the advantages are. Ramirez still has a pretty clear advantage in stolen bases for me. I think, you know, Castro's not really much of a base stealer. He's not very smart on the base paths either. So I would still lean Castro over Ramirez because I think the latent power is going to be the separator between the two players. But they're very similar, and I think that, you know, if you pick one over the other, I can't really give you too much gruff. I just prefer Castro.
Sounds good. So as we move down this list, Mike, who is the player in the three-star tier that you would be least surprised to see earn $25 this year?
Are we talking about a mono format, or are we just...
Yeah.
Well, I guess it would be a mono, because, yeah, in mix, that would be very difficult to do. So $25. Well, I don't know if anybody could do it, so you're saying least surprised? You know, the weird thing is it would probably be one of the speed guys. It would probably be someone like Andrus or Alcides Escobar or Jean Segura, kind of bouncing back to that level where the average comes up, so they get enough steals and it all comes together. Andrus is probably the safe pick, just in terms of, you know, if he can kind of bounce up to 35 to 40 steals and get enough power to get there. I mean, honestly, I don't have faith in anyone here doing this. So that's kind of my answer. Segura is the guy I actually really like to bounce back. Just because, you know, we know about the tragedy that happened last year. I kind of agree with Keith Cromer, who I think, you know, wrote him up as a target earlier this week. I think if Segura's, you know, back mentally, I think a lot of the problems he had last year, you know, it's impossible to know, but I suspect a lot of those problems could disappear.
Matt, what about you? Same question. Who's the guy who you think could jump up most from this group?
Well, you know, Mike took my Andrus answer, so I'm going to go with Xander Bogaerts. You know, I think, you know, he had a pretty bad year last year. Was, you know, all over the place, didn't really live up to expectations. But if he starts putting together any bits of his talent, you know, the stolen bases numbers aren't going to be there. But if he starts putting together the average with the power, I think that's a guy who probably makes a jump up to earning 25 in a mono. And you know, Segura is a very good answer too, Mike. I kind of resent you taking both of those guys.
Yeah, I probably should have like stopped at one and not just hedged my bets with like three guys.
Yeah. Thanks for that, by the way. Thanks.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm with you. I think Segura is the guy. I think he has the things that you look for in someone who could do that. He has a strong contact profile. He has stolen base ability, and he's got a little bit of pop. So, you know, obviously it was a bad 2014 season and year for a whole host of reasons, both on and off the field. But if he does what he's capable of, he could provide a good amount of value at the spot he's going at. One thing I want to throw out there, I was looking at these numbers earlier and actually put them in my Dynasty post that's going up tomorrow, the top 50 Dynasty League shortstops. Over the past three seasons, Elvis Andrus has hit .274 and averaged three homers and 30 steals per season. You think, okay, fine, he hits for a little bit average and steals some bases. He's not terribly exciting. Over the same three-year span, Alcides Escobar has hit .270 while averaging four home runs per season and 29 steals. That's pretty much indistinguishable. And yet, even with those 3 years of data, Elvis Andrews is still being taken a good 40-something picks ahead of Escobar in leagues this year, and that does not make a whole lot of sense to me. The counting stats are what they are, but Andrews is no guarantee to be hitting high in the lineup with Ron Washington out of town, and Escobar is no guarantee to be hitting low in the lineup with Ned Yost still in town. So it seems to me that they are extraordinarily similar, but are being valued quite differently. Mike, do you think that there is a valid reason for the gap between them, or do you think that's going to close up?
Well, I know the reason. I don't think it's valid. I think that, you know, Andrus has been disappointing but steady, and he had that prospect sheen. But now, I forget whether it was you or Mao who said it earlier, I think what we see from Andrus is what we're going to get. Maybe there'll be a bit of a power spike, but, you know, we're not going to ever see like 15 home runs from him. We might see like 8 to 10. Whereas Escobar, he had that horrid, you know, absolutely awful 2013, and that really skewed people against him. I think people still remember that. Anyone who got burned by him in 2013 didn't touch him last year, and probably has that in the back of their mind this year. But I think for the most part, if I remember correctly, you know, his 2012 was Babbitt fueled in one direction. His 2013 was Babbitt fueled badly the other way. I actually have Escobar a dollar ahead of Andrus. I think he's a slightly better bet this year. And I agree with you. I think their profiles are very similar, and people are paying for the name with Andrus and the perceived consistency. But I'd probably rather have Escobar if I had to pick between the two.
Fair enough. So any other interesting names in this tier before we move on? Should we talk about what we should expect from Jimmy Rollins this year, now that he's out of LA and out of Philadelphia and into LA to arguably a better lineup, although it depends what you think of the players that are left in Los Angeles.
Man, I don't have a – I have such a hard time reading him, because last year I didn't think he'd have the bounce back he had. And he's not young, and he's certainly athletic and in good shape. I feel like he could do something close to what he did last year, which is what Pakoda's telling me. I also feel like he could slip again and hit like 8 to 10 home runs and, you know, just really plummet. So, you know, this is probably why I have him in the 3-star. You know, in terms of value, you could have put him in the 4-star. I think you just have to kind of take the age a little bit into account and kind of bet on a slight dip from last year.
Yeah, I mean, I guess you just have to figure out whether you think last year was a dead cat or if he's got some more dead cat in him.
That is a very true statement. All right, so let's get to the fireworks down here in the 2-star tier. The 2-star tier is led by two players who, as you write up in the tiers, are extremely high in ADP versus where I think you have them. Who do you feel worse about at their current draft spot, Danny Santana or Javier Baez?
If you're talking about redraft leagues, and you know, this is kind of a twist my arm sort of thing, I feel worse about Baez. I think that Santana, you know, I get it, he's overvalued, but I feel like you're going to get those steals. The average is going to drop because, you know, he's a BABIP-fueled guy, but he's going to do enough that you kind of feel like, yeah, you're going to get something back from him. You know, don't take him where he's being taken, you know, in NFBC. I just feel like Baez right now, you know, we're talking right now in, you know, it's February 4th, and the season's over 2 months away. Is Javi Baez even going to be on the opening day roster for the Cubs? Like, do we know that for certain? You know, and Mao, you're in Chicago. You've probably got a better feel for, you know, what they're saying about him locally than I do. I just don't feel like there are any guarantees with him this year whatsoever. You know, he could go out and hit 25 home runs and steal 15 bases and, you know, hit 230 or 240. He could also be in the minors. He could also you know, hit $1.50 again for a month, and the Cubs could be like, all right, like, we gotta, you know, we gotta send him down. I just feel like there's so many questions with him in a redraft that if you're twisting my arm, I don't really want either of these guys that are being taken. I'm going to take the safer play with Santana, unless you're talking about a 10-team mixed league where there's so many replacements, you know, then I'll take the upside with Baez.
Yeah, I mean, it's, you know, we'll get into this more on Tino because he's a fascinating player, but I, for one, do think that he could benefit from starting the year at AAA. So, you know, he's a high upside fantasy player, you know, and a very high upside prospect in general, but there are a ton of questions about him, and I don't know if he's going to be able to answer them right away. So he's getting tremendously overdrafted, and it's one of those things where I just think that, like you said, Mike, I just don't think it's a certain thing that he's going to be on the Cubs roster opening day. And I actually think that he would probably benefit from starting in the minors.
Yeah, I think it's pretty safe to say that none of us will be owning Baez in a redraft league this year. But with that said, I do believe in his talent a lot long term. And I think it's, you know, it's difficult to sometimes to separate out the two, because you have a lot of long term expectations for some of these players, and we saw this a little bit with Xander Bogaerts last year, who I think everyone still think is a lot of people still think is going to be a fantasy star, including myself, but you know, it's the rush to anoint these guys that gets us in trouble. And if Baez was the kind of guy who had just, if he had just a little bit higher of a floor for 2015, then you can absolutely justify the investment at the cost. I mean, he's going at about the same spot in drafts as Manny Machado was after his first 2 months in 2012. But Machado was actually pretty good at the major league level in those 2 months, and Baez, you know, hit some pretty long home runs, but he was ostensibly bad. So,
the thing with Baez too is that what's really tough, and I agree with you about the talent. It's just that there is no, and I know it's a small sample, it's 2 months, but there is virtually no historical precedent for what he did in terms of those strikeouts. And, you know, I know people strike out more. It's not the same context. But even adjusting for context, you know, I kind of went out and looked. You've got, like, Mike Schmidt in his first half season. And then you've got a lot of failures. And they aren't just guys who weren't, who were non-prospects. Like, you've got some prospect failures on that list, too. Certainly no one with Baez's profile. But there are people that are were close to his profile that people said the same thing, like, oh, he's talented, you know, he'll do it, you know, like, it might not happen overnight, but it'll happen. And I think that I'm not writing off Javi Baez, you know, I don't get me wrong. I just think there are a lot more questions about him, and there should be more questions, you know, than I think some people are asking.
Yeah, I think what we're saying right now, it's a point that Brett drove home pretty well, is that this isn't a testament to Javier Baez, the prospect, or, you know, what his long term production is going to be. Rather, what it is it's a 1 year statement about what we saw last year and what we're expecting in 2015, in 2015 only. So, you know, nobody here is writing him off, but it's probably best to temper your expectations for 2015, and you make peace with the fact that you're probably not going to own him because somebody's going to grab him early.
Yeah, and you know, Mike did talk about the strikeout rate. I mean, it was terrible. He struck out 41.5% of the time he went up to the plate, but it's also not it's not what should be expected of him going forward based on his minor league track record. I mean, there are always going to be some guys that get up to the majors and strike out more than you think. Always guys that get up to the majors and strike out less than you think. But, you know, Baez is a guy who was, you know, relatively, who was pretty consistently in the low 20s in percentage strikeout in the lower minors and ticked up into the high 20s in the upper minors. Those guys generally don't jump into the 40s in strikeout rate. So if and that it very well may not happen in 2015, but when he gets to the point where he can keep that strikeout rate to about 30%, even a 30% strikeout rate for Baez would be an extraordinary fantasy player. We just don't know if that's going to happen, and we don't know when that's going to happen. So with the with the additional concerns about playing time and all of that, it's wise to pump the brakes a little bit in redraft leagues. Any other hobby Baez thoughts before we move on?
No, I'm saving my hot takes for tomorrow.
Sounds good.
We could probably talk about this all night. You know, I think I do agree that's not what I would expect out of his profile. I think the only thing I'd add, I think that sometimes people look at minor league sample and major league sample and say it's too small, but he's ultimately going to have to perform on the major league level. So somehow, even with a small sample, you almost need to kind of wait it a little bit more, you know, while weighing at the same time that Baez was really young for the majors. And you know, it is the other thing. You know, you look at some of these guys, you know, we were just talking about Starlin Castro, you know, another Cub, Anthony Rizzo. Rizzo broke out last year. It took him some time too. I think that to me is the message with Baez. I think Baez ultimately could be successful, but we could be looking at 2017 or 2018, particularly with, you know, some of the, you know, the problems that we saw so far.
Yeah, and it's pretty easy to tell what his problems are. I mean, you can look at his strikeout numbers and you can guess, but pitchers took note, and he's going to have to adjust in a major way. I mean, he saw strikes at a 40% clip, which is severely below league average. League average is about 49%. And he swung at a ton of pitches outside the strike zone, and he made contact on a really piss poor number of them. This might be the most telltale sign of what Javi Baez needs to work on, and it's what all the scouting reports say as well. But you know, sometimes scouting reports are backed up with statistics. The league contact rate on pitches outside the strike zone is 63%, or at least was 63% in 2014. Anyone want to guess what Baez's contact rate was on pitches outside the strike zone?
I feel like it was 40%, like 40 or 35.
Yeah, I'd guess 35.
39.7%.
Yeah.
That's bad. Yeah. That's really, really bad. You got to stop swinging at those, Javi. You got to stop swinging at those.
Yeah, he's swinging at it before he's even up the plate, man.
He is.
Yeah, I you know, the other guy I was thinking about, because I did a lot of research and looking at Baez and some of these comps, and you know, I again, comps are comps, you know, they're not the be all and end all, but you know, he's not Russ Branyan. Like, he's not a guy who was striking out in the minors, you know, as Brett said. But interestingly enough, you know, Mark Reynolds was a guy I would have assumed was like a huge strikeout guy in the minors, but I kind of went back and looked at him. I was like, you know, he really wasn't. Like, I think he was like in the 20s, like low to mid 20s for the most part, particularly as he right before he made it up. And you know, then, you know, Reynolds kind of got exposed, and you know, again, Reynolds was not the prospect that Baez is, and I'm not, you know, selling the talent that way, but it is interesting. Like, it's a deficiency to me that I think can be fixed, but I think is harder to fix, you know, when the number's that high, and as you said, Brett, when you're swinging at that many, you know, when there's that much going on with like the swing and miss rate, it's really a lot harder, I think, than people you know, think, and not so much, you know, on the BP team, but people who are outside of the team and kind of have this rosy view of Baez, like, you know, he's just going to roll out of bed this year. And like I said, you know, hit 25 home runs and get that average to a respectable level.
Yeah, it's going to take a lot of work to get the average to a respectable level. But even Mark Reynolds, who is one of the more hacktastic players that we've seen in this sort of generation of hitters, his career contact rate on pitches outside the strike zone is 47%. So for his career, he's a full 7 or 8 percentage points higher than Baez was in 2014.
Well, and the other thing to point out is even if Baez somehow did become Reynolds, I mean, Reynolds was a pretty awesome fantasy player there for a little while.
He has that season, that 2009 season. Yeah. That 2009 season is essentially what the biggest Baez supporters think that he can do. He hit 260 that year, 44 homers, 24 steals. That is a season.
Yeah. Yeah, I think he was a $37 earner that year in mono, although I don't have it in front of me. I'm just going off of what I think I remember.
Ooh, boy.
Yeah, and that was in a higher offensive environment, too.
It might have been a little lower then, but yeah, he was in the 30s, like, clearly.
Yeah. I guess that can finally conclude our 15-minute segment on Javier Baez. But let's go down and close out with our favorite game. And since we don't have a guest this week, we can hopefully step all over each other's toes a little bit less with these picks. So, Mal, you get to go first this week. Who's your one star guy that you are taking here?
Well, it's Javi Baez. No,
Josh Donaldson.
No, you know, this is kind of a pick between two guys. I think one guy is feel pretty confident he's going to get scooped up, but I'm going to go with Brad Miller here. You know, I think he got oversold as a prospect, and he shot out the gate pretty hard last year. He had a really, really good first week, and then just degraded into suck for the rest of the season. Just never found it, but I do believe enough in the talent to take him over some of the other names here. I don't think, you know, he's going to be a $25 earner in mono or anything, but I think he can be very competent and probably the most competent out of this bunch.
All right, so Mike, who's your guy?
I'm going to go with the guy I went with in the article, and you know, it's this might surprise some people, but I think Wilmer Flores, you know, he's been the punchline or part of the punchline of the joke that is the Mets, and this has nothing to do with his defense, obviously, but I think if that defense is even, you know, just somewhat below average as opposed to awful, I think that back could produce what Pakoda's saying, which is about, you know, 13 to 15 home runs with, you know, a 250, 255 average. And in this context, in this tier, I think that's respectable. You know, I kind of look at the rest of these guys. I won't mention them because I don't want to take your guy, Brett. But I think that could outperform just about anybody here. And, you know, the thing about Flores, people forget, you know, people look at him like, oh, he's been up twice. He's failed. I mean, he's 22 years old. And he hit in the minors. And I know it was Vegas, and you have to take that into account. But I think there's a bat here, and I think it's a bat that can – and again, at this one-star tier, I think it's a bat that can kind of play compared to some of these other guys.
I completely agree, and if you hadn't taken him, I would have taken Flores. I think the one thing that gets overlooked about Flores is people assume he has some power, but his contact rate has been very, very strong all throughout the minor leagues and was really strong last year. I mean, he – had 274 plate appearances and struck out, hit an 11% strikeout rate. That's really, really good. And, you know, even with a 265 BABIP, he still hit 250. Flores is a guy who could legitimately hit 275. He's not a guy who's kind of going to be stuck in the 250 range just because he, you know, well, for any reason, but he his strikeout rate is something that is worthwhile to keep an eye on, just because he's go ahead.
I think that's fair. You know, I mentioned 255, and that to me is 250 is probably more of a floor than a ceiling. You know, I'm just kind of looking at it as a, you know, if I were going to buy or draft him, just kind of the stats I'd put in ink as opposed to pencil.
That's fair. So I guess I have to actually pick my guy. My guy is I'll pretty much do anything to avoid taking Andrelton Simmons. So I am going to take Didi Gregorius, the heir apparent to Derek Jeter in the Bronx. I don't think he's a particularly good hitter, but when I'm comparing the rest of the guys left, Jed Lowrie can't stay healthy and isn't all that great when he does. Simmons, I just don't think can hit or hit for power. And Crawford is, you know, certainly good enough, but plays in a really bad park. Gregorius is a left-handed hitter who's going to be in Yankee Stadium. So I'll just close my eyes and hope for the best with that one. But I think he can walk into about 10 to 12 home runs this year and hit for a reasonable enough average to be worth taking there.
He would have been my second choice. So, yeah, I kind of like Gregorius for the reasons you cited. I think that nothing special, but I could see that power in that park being, like, good enough.
Yep. All you need is good enough when you're talking about the one that starts here.
Oh, Jesus.
Man, that's a sad tagline.
Does that I feel like that perfectly sums up Wilmer Flores, right?
Yeah. I think Brett and I, you know, maybe it's our Mets glasses coloring. I think we like him a little bit better than that. You know, I'm not saying to go and say, oh yeah, he's going to out earn all the two star guys. I just think he could, if things break right for him, I think he could be somewhere in the middle of that two star band. You know, which is what these value picks are kind of all about.
Yeah, no, I was 100% that he was going to get taken, but wanted to let you guys talk about him.
Thanks, yeah, man.
And we did. So that was shortstops. So we'll take a quick break and come back and wrap things up. Welcome back, and thank you for listening to episode 41 of Flex Fly Forever. We are and have always been a Baseball Prospectus podcast. You can go to baseballprospectus.com now and read all of our stuff. And if you go there this week, you will notice that all of our shortstop content for our positional series, which works out to about 18 articles, including Mike's tiers, Mao's infographics, and my dynasty rankings, everything is free for this week. So you can come check it out, see what you're missing. Then if you want to subscribe, come subscribe and you get the rest of the series. We'll continue through outfield and starting pitching and relievers through the next 4 weeks or so. And if you sign up for a super premium membership, you get access to the Bat Signal, our fantasy answering service, where we will answer any question you have, fantasy related or otherwise, although we prefer you do not ask us non-fantasy questions as we are not responsible for that advice. And we will answer them within about 12 hours. So with that, we are out of here. Any questions you have for us for future episodes, email us flagsflyforever@baseballprospectus.com. Otherwise, we will see you next week where we will dive into the outfield headfirst. Have a good evening.
Bye.
Hey, can we do that outro thing that Tino does where we pretend to have a conversation?
We actually do have conversations.
Yeah, that's not a...
That's not a bit.
No, I know. I'm just saying.
By the way, there's a pretty good chance that the